Blog Talk Radio.
Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo. And tonight we've got a pretty good show for you. We got George Dixon as our special guest tonight. And we're promoting, he's going to be our guest most of the week, Thursday and Friday, with special guests. But tonight we're going to talk a bit about what's coming up on Thursday and Friday night and talk about the George is particularly concerned right now about the sun and how the sun's affecting the earth, and he wants to talk about the different scientific things that are happening that play right into the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that October 28th is going to be quite a remarkable moment for us, and very, very curious to see what happens. But he's going to lay the groundwork for that, and he's going to introduce what we're going to talk about Thursday night with, and I believe we're going to have, I forgot his name, actually, I should have been better prepared, but the gentleman who wrote a fantastic book. No. We had him on, we did a two-part show with him, actually, last year, and last summer, about this time last summer. And it's called The Comet of God, The Comets of God, New Scientific Evidence for God, but more so by Jeffrey Goodman. He talks about
the links between the Bible
and comets. But more so, he's very well studied in astronomy and comets, okay? And he's written quite an extensive book on it, and describes what comets are and how they have a tendency to keep coming around.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of an impact they can create on the Earth, and how these comet events created Earth cataclysms. You know.
So he's going to talk about that.
He'll talk about that, but not more so relating it now to the stars coming. Nibiru has been sighted, okay, and it's on its way.
Mm.
All right, the blue star.
That's an interesting phenomenon.
Right, so we're waiting for that one. And a lot of interesting stuff. So George will fill us in on it tonight.
So that's at 8:30.
That's at 8:30. And we got Pete. We got
Woody in the ring at 9.
Yep. Yeah.
And then a little music break after that, and then we'll be back with more news.
Yeah. So let's get the all started here. And, hang on a second. Oh, boy. Even though I think I'm perfectly prepared, I'm not. I want to go to the next one here, because that was a good one. Now, everybody knows that Geithner is planning to quit. Okay, now that he screwed up the entire economy.
He's done his job.
He's done his job, and
he retires with a big pension.
Yeah, and he'll go work for the Fed where he was working before, and maybe he'll become the next president of the Fed.
Oh,
why not? You know,
lucky us.
U.S. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner has served notice to the country's president of his intention to leave his post as early as this summer. I mean, good riddance to this Fed crap, but anonymous sources close to the issue disclosed. In office since 2008, Geithner is believed to have signaled his desire to step down as early as this summer to U.S. President Obama in a private conversation with him, reports Washington Post. However, he is said to have delayed a definitive decision on the matter until the outcome of the congressional controversy over the huge U.S. national debt. The American Republican and Democratic parties do not see eye to eye on how to contain this country's massive $14 trillion debt. Geithner has earlier warned that unless necessary measures are taken by August 2nd, a catastrophic default would be on the horizon.
I have an answer for that. All the bankers should give back all the money.
Oh, wouldn't that be a good
claw
idea?
Back.
I think that would help.
And all the car companies and
I think we just went after the trillionaires in this, and got back all the money we gave back to all these damn banks around the world.
And all their bonuses.
Which was like $2.5 or $3 trillion, something like that.
And claw back the bonuses.
All the bonuses, that would be a
billion
dollars. And then just get out of the damn wars, we'd be fine.
Yep.
But Timothy Geithner is leaving this, he's bailing out,
and
man.
And throw out the Fed.
Yeah, but Geithner is definitely bailing out because he knows what's coming.
Yeah.
All right. He smells it. He caused it. He doesn't want to be that known in history.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be sitting there when the economy falls on his.
He doesn't want to be shot.
No, and he will be. Anyway.
He'll be the target.
He would be
the target.
You know, but Paulson had a lot to do with the previous jerk, and this guy's a jerk. And whoever the hell comes in to place
they're going to have trouble finding somebody to take
over. Whoever takes over this time is going to be a complete nutter.
Well, they'd have to put a patsy in there.
Be a George Bush kind of guy,
an
idiot. The American Republican and Democratic parties, should Geithner decide to relieve himself of his duties, which is a good way to relieve himself, of duties in the government, Obama would face a challenging time appointing and obtaining legislative confirmation for the would-be replacement in the throes of the 2012 election campaign. Geithner's departure would also come at a time of falling recovery and high unemployment rates, giving Obama further cause for distress.
Yeah.
So Geithner basically is saying he's incompetent. You know what I'm saying? So he says, I don't want this job anymore. It's impossible. I'm getting the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not taking the blame. I'm not taking the fall for it. I did all your bidding, and I'm tired of it now. Now that we've actually totally spent every dime of the government pensions, trying to hold this government up, bailed everybody out. Now I'm tired. Yeah. So that's what you get, man. It's really sick.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
just go down the other way.
You're
going too fast.
Use this down. Sometimes things take a while, folks.
Okay.
National Crown Court has zero mandate. Oh, this was really fascinating. I wanted to read this because this came out Sunday, and
this is from Alex Jones. From Alex Jones, Prison Planet.
Yeah.
And it's by Tony Cartolucci.
Yes. Yeah.
If an entire continent rejects an alleged international institution's actions as illegitimate and self-serving, does said institution still get to call itself international? Furthermore, does it still hold any sort of mandate to continue on as a self-proclaimed international arbitrator? Certainly not. And for International Criminal Court, whose arrest warrant for Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi was soundly rejected by the 53-member African Union, their last shred of self-proclaimed credibility has been rendered moot. In this photo, they have nation...
In Tripoli, they're just showing the ravage that the NATO bastards are doing to Libya.
Yeah. The arrest warrant itself is based on the ICC's own investigation. The ICC said, in the course of its investigation, due to unprecedented cooperation from different states and organizations, none of which are currently working in Libya, the Office of the Prosecutor has been able to collect extensive documentation and evidence in a short period of time through 30 missions to 11 states and through interviews with a large number of persons, including key insiders and eyewitnesses. Such a premise is so recklessly irresponsible, so baseless, and so morally bankrupt, it's easy to see why the African Union had such a difficult time accepting it.
A look over this evidence presented by the Office of the Prosecutor reveals a cut-and-paste bonanza of articles and reports taken from disingenuous organizations funded by the same corporations and foundations that contrived the ICC itself. The entire basis of the prosecutor's case is built upon reports taken from BBC, Al Jazeera, the London Guardian, New York Times, the U.S. State Department's Broadcast Board of Governors, Run Voice of America, the Globalist funded Human Rights Watch and National Endowment for Democracy and Tides Foundation funded International Federation for Human Rights, and among many, many others.
The International Criminal Court itself claims to be an independent, permanent court that investigates and prosecutes persons accused of the most serious crimes of international concern, namely genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. A visit to the Coalition for the International Criminal Court site reveals just who's behind the ICC, who is actively promoting it and networking with the ICC's various NGO partners, and the fact that all involve both the same financial and political supporters. The CICC claims to include 2,500 civil society organizations in 150 different countries working in partnership to strengthen international cooperation with the ICC, ensure that the court is fair, effective, and independent, make justice both visible and universal, and advance stronger national laws that deliver justice to victims of war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide. The CICC, however, also is deeply appreciative of the generous support provided by the European Union, the Ford Foundation, the Fortune 500 lined John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, George Soros' Open Society Institute, and Humanity United.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
These are all the funders of NPR.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
NPR, man. It might as well be National Public Radio.
Humanity United, in turn, boasts partnership with the globalist conspirators of the BBC, World Service Trust, NED, Open Society, and the U.S. State Department-funded Bentech. George Soros' Open Society Institute and the NED-funded Solidarity Center, which mobilized Egypt's labor unions, and just as the U.S.-stoked unrest began to falter. These generous supporters are literally the same organizations that have built up the very civil organizations the CICC is working in partnership with, and the same disingenuous organization supplying the fake, contrived ICC with evidence to ensure its arrest warrants with. African Union executive Jean Ping called the ICC discriminatory, going only after crimes committed in Africa, while ignoring those committed by the West in places like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. The AU also condemned France for its blatant violation of the already illegitimate USNCR 1973 by dropping weapons to Libya's al-Qaeda-linked rebels. Meanwhile, U.S. Whoops. Oh, too fast there. I don't know what happened on that. We lost it. Just a second, folks. Meanwhile, U.S. National Endowment for a Democracy-funded project on the Middle East, Democracy, reported that in reaction to Libya's threats to fight back against NATO aggression, U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner said, "This is an individual who is obviously capable of carrying out these kinds of threats. It makes him seem so dangerous, but we continue to carry out the NATO mission while at the same time increasing pressure on him to step aside. Like France airdropping weapons to admitted terrorists, the U.S. attempting to remove Gaddafi is a direct violation of the NATO's coalition's own contrived UN resolution. The ICC isn't filing cases against NATO members for their multitude of crimes, and the fact that an entire continent has rejected the ICC's decision settles the fact for all concerned that the contrived organization holds absolutely no legitimacy."
There you go.
I agree with him.
I totally agree with him as well. So, anyway, you can get that on Infowars.com, by the way. It's pretty sick. This evacuation right now in Montana is much worse than it looks. You know how these bastards
manipulate everything.
At first, they were claiming only 1,000 gallons of spill. Now it's up to 40,000. It sounds like BP to me.
It sounds like Exxon spill.
Yeah, an unestimated amount of. Wait a second. Oil spilling on Montana Yellowstone River forces evacuation.
Oh boy.
An undetermined amount
of crude oil spilled from an ExxonMobil pipeline into the Yellowstone River in Montana prompting evacuations of nearby residents on Saturday, authorities said. The spill that was detected early Saturday came from a crude oil pipeline that runs from the Silver Tip to the Billings, Montana, the ExxonMobil pipeline company said in a statement. The pipe was subsequently shut down, and state and federal authorities were alerted, the company said. Nearby residents in Laurel, Montana, were evacuated in the wee hours of the morning but were able to return to their homes by 6 a.m., said a spokesman for the Laurel City Fire and Ambulance. Well, where does it go after that?
I don't know, but they found it north already, 250 miles north, North Dakota. Evacuation orders of all Yellowstone County have been lifted, so there people can go back. But Exxon said that the cause of the rupture was not known. It's unclear how the oil has been released. We recognize the seriousness of this incident and are working to address it, the company said. Our principal focus is on protecting the safety and health of the public and our employees.
Yeah,
what
right.
a crock of crap. Unbelievable, unbelievable. You know, that they can let this go. And what? How much damage it's going to do. It's unreal. Tons of... Oh, okay, it's 8:16. Let's see, where are we here? Looking for things that are working here. And, hang on a second.
Go to Facebook for your things that you posted on that.
I am. I just wanted to, some of them are from here. Okay. Let's see. Oh, I thought this was good. I wanted to read some stuff on the, do some stuff on the flotilla here. But it turns out today, they must have got their muscles, they must have started to flex their muscles. But today, Israeli airstrikes hit eastern Gaza.
Oh,
right? The Israeli forces have launched airstrikes in the eastern part of Gaza City with no immediate reports of the exact numbers of casualties. According to initial reports, the attacks occurred late on Tuesday night in the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier in the day, Israeli artillery shelling in east of the Al-Maghaza refugee camp in Gaza killed two Palestinians and injured another. In April, a series of Israeli airstrikes killed at least 19 Palestinians in the occupied territories. On May 15th, the Israeli army military gunned down over two dozen people, among those being breaking Israel's 1948 occupation of Palestine, known as the Nakba Day, or the Day of the Catastrophe. The Israeli army frequently bombs the tunnel network in Gaza, claiming that Palestinian resistance fighters use the tunnel to store and smuggle in weapons. Palestinians, however, dismiss such allegations, insisting they are forced to resort to the underground tunnels to bring in basic living supplies to the impoverished Gazans because the territory has been sealed off to the outside world by a punishing Israeli blockade for over 3 years. And some 1.5 million people are being denied their basic rights, including the freedom of movement and their rights to appropriate living conditions, work, health, and education. In 1948, Israeli forces displaced some 700,000 Palestinians, forcing them to flee to different countries. What a great goddamn country that is. If God hasn't damned Israel, I do. All right? For what they're doing. What states are doing... this one here was another Israeli issue, which really... knocked me out. Israeli rabbi urges killing of non-Jews. Right? An ultra-Orthodox Israeli rabbi has defended the killing of non-Jews, including infants, in his new book on ways to tackle threats against Israel. In a sequel to his earlier book, The King's Torah, Rabbi Yazik Shapira justifies the killing of non-Jews that pose a threat to Israel, while describing practical ways of dealing with the people in the Gaza Strip. King's Torah was first published in 2009. Shapira was arrested last summer for encouraging Jews to kill non-Jews in his book. He was also suspected of involvement in a crude rocket attack directed at a Palestinian village in 2008. In 2010, Shapira encouraged the use of Palestinians as human shields by army soldiers, even when the victims happened to be a civilian. Anything you do to keep the war tough is permissible and obligatory, according to the Torah, Shapira proclaimed. And the extreme rabbinic rulings have offered the Israeli military a free hand to attack civilian population. See that? What kind of freaking crazy bastards are running that country? Huh?
It's just like here, they get the religion.
Oh, yeah, you got
up.
All these crazy bastards running it. It's just,
yep.
just crazy bastards. I mean, they're not even halfway sane. They're just crazy bastards. Right?
Bloodthirsty.
Bloodthirsty, crazy bastards. Spain might recognize Palestinian state. I was very proud, very pleased to hear this possibility. But let's see. The PA has hailed the Spanish Parliament for advising its government to recognize a Palestinian state in case talks between Israel and Palestine would not resume. Do you want to read that? Or are you Chief Palestinian negotiator, Saad Iqtat, on Saturday called on the Spanish government to take their Parliament's advice to vote in favor of Palestinian statehood in September when they are to seek UN recognition. Zahua reported.
Right. This is a step in the right direction, he added. The Spanish Parliament advised its government on Friday to support the Palestinians for recognition. Acting Palestinian Authority Chief Mahmoud Abbas has earlier announced that 130 countries have so far agreed to recognize Palestine, the Palestinian state, based on the lines before the 1967 Mideast War. He, however, added that the world is not united and there are many who try to thwart the efforts for a statehood. The Israeli-Palestinian talks reached a deadlock after Tel Aviv refused to extend a 10-month partial freeze on its illegitimate settlements activity. Last month, leaked cables revealed that Israel's foreign ministry has launched a global campaign to thwart the Palestinian move to seek statehood recognition. Israeli diplomats have been instructed to lobby the highest possible officials in their respective countries and muster their support to vote against the recognition of a Palestinian state. Moreover, Israel's closest ally, the United States, has promised to veto any vote for the recognition of the Palestinian statehood.
Well, they can veto their asses because,
NATO doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, but I'll tell you something. I don't know, Russia doesn't like Jews either, but if Russia and China agreed to that, all right, then they'd be forced to, even with one U.S. veto, it wouldn't matter, on all the countries. And they would have to recognize it as a state. So screw you, USA. We're so screwed.
We're on the wrong side of everything.
No, we're just so screwed, but, with this government we have. It's unbelievable. I mean...
We're just not on the side of truth and justice.
No, we're not at all. So we're on the side of... I mean, this is the kind of crazy town that can... crazy people, crazy court system that can allow somebody like Casey Anthony to walk free, you know?
Well, see, I disagree with what you're saying on that.
I know you do, but I don't care because I think.
Well, you have to care. Well, you might think that based on what the media has shown you.
Based on what I've seen.
No,
that
was just a snapshot. You weren't the jury. You weren't there. You didn't see all the evidence all the time, or the lack of evidence. The prosecution brought a case that wasn't strong, and when the case isn't strong, it gets tossed out.
You're a liberal. You're the liberal's liberal of death penalty and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I agree firmly with the death penalty as long as it's just.
This doesn't have anything to do with the death
and
penalty.
I don't care if she got it or not. The fact was is that she should have, something should have happened there. That was ridiculous. But anyway.
The case was weak.
Something was wrong.
They were
I don't care. They acquitted OJ too, but that tells you about the justice system. And the amazing 12 jurors. They said, let's get the hell out of here before, so we're already screwed up a whole month. Let's get out of here. Go to Israel. There's a lot of Israeli news and a lot of flotilla news, and I thought we might do that before we bring George on, but...
we should play a short audio.
Why don't you want to play an audio portion?
Mm-hmm.
This is cute. I should read this. Israeli army releases photographic proof of flotilla as a threat to Israel.
Oh, they used telescope?
Yeah. It says, in a move intended to convince skeptics to finally accept Israel's claim that the Gaza flotilla, too, poses a real danger, Israeli military spokesperson's office was issued photographic evidence in a blog post titled, Flotilla 2 Seeks Provocation Poses Threat to Israel. Well, it turns out that the threat is none other than the Pulitzer Prize-winning American author and poet Alice Walker, whose fearsome and terrifying smile can be seen.
She's in her 80s, for God's sake.
Smile can be seen in the Israeli issued image. But the danger to Israel does not end there, as the IDF spokesman explains. Organizers of the 2011 Gaza flotilla have a provocative-seeking agenda, deliberately provoke and humiliate Israeli soldiers. For example, organizers train boat passengers on how to defiantly rebuff Israeli Navy attempts to peacefully board the boats. The IDF must be referring to the nonviolence training all passengers received, as well as the nonviolent pledge they all received. Indeed, Israel does show every day that it finds nonviolence very humiliating. And still, the military spokesperson, Bob, made me finally see the light. Those poor Israeli soldiers at risk of humiliation from Alice Walker and 87-year-old Holocaust survivor Hedy Epstein, among others. Of course, no one can forget how Israel peacefully boarded the Mavi Marmara, part of last year's flotilla in international waters, with a force that involved large warships, a swarm of armed speedboats carrying dozens of heavy armed commandos, and airborne troops dropped from helicopters.
And we might add that an American was killed and nothing was done about that.
Yeah.
Was killed in cold blood.
Not only that, nine people were killed in cold blood.
And eight other people.
And one American, and they were nonviolent.
That's right.
All right, these guys just shot them. Okay? Israel insists that it was the passengers who were violent because they failed to receive the Israeli hijackers with tea and traditional Turkish bork pastries. Now, in case you doubt Israel's version of what happened, you can just watch all the footage taken by the hundreds of passengers and journalists on board. Oh, wait, no, you can't do that, because Israel, the only democracy in the Middle East, confiscated all the evidence and is still refusing to return it. Other than selectively edited and doctored images released by Israel, the only independent footage that escaped Israeli censorship and manipulation was iReleased, an analysis of what showed anything but a peaceful boarding. It was a full-scale military assault that took nine innocent lives, and yet it is an Israeli military that has the chutzpah to whine about provocations to its soldiers.
Huh.
So, yeah, I agree with this guy. You know, I totally agree. What a joke. What a farce. Absolute farce. And we're going to bring up our guest. I think I will do this. I saw this today, The Working Class Hero, by John Lennon. I think I'll play that right before Josh comes up. What do you think?
Play it now.
And I hope you enjoy this.
We have just a few minutes.
It'll be fine. It's all right. I hope you enjoy this. It's a great song. Working Class Hero. It's on YouTube, by the way.
Soon as you're gone, they make you feel small. Class hero is something to be. in the audience.
Complain.
Good.
Oh, did you just hear that song by John Lennon?
Yeah, I didn't believe that was John Lennon. You know, I wondered who wrote that, and I like the lyrics.
You know, they still are really relevant today, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, it's been a while since I've caught up with you guys, but I'll tell you what, that Casey Anthony trial, I think really took the nation. It really did.
Well, it's a distraction for everyone.
Well, there's doubt about it, but, you know, in following the Mayan calendar, I think the ethics are coming into play here. What is allowed and what isn't allowed, I think everything was thrown up into the air, especially with all these TV media lawyers who know what they're going to say before they say it, but it was a real circus. There's no doubt about it.
What did you think about the decision?
Well, I had my own insights, I think, into what happened there, but I thought it was right, and I really don't think she murdered her daughter. I think it's just it was something that just got out of proportion. You know, the poor little girl could have drowned it, and the family, trying to do what they had to do, did what they did, and apparently they did something wrong. And you know, I think the father put it in perspective, and he says it went out of proportion, it went out of control, they couldn't control it, and
I think what happened was, I think she might have died, Casey was there, she might have fell in the pool. And drowned.
Yeah, but there was no proof for what you're saying.
Well, I don't know. All I know is that the poor kid was bundled up in a garbage can with duct tape around there and thrown into the woods. I mean, nobody called the cops for 30 days, and she was missing. I had just the whole thing stunk to high hell of murder, and Casey Anthony lied like a troop, lied like crazy all the way through it, and they proved her lying.
Now, look, Leo, you can't say that for sure. You can't say that. She didn't lie. I think things weren't told the way they
George.
But
she was convicted of perjury. She did lie, but that doesn't make her a murderer.
All right. Okay. All right.
Had four misdemeanor convictions of lying, and she's probably a miserable, nasty person. But that doesn't make her a murderer, and the family's really screwed up.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make them murderers. I mean, maybe they're not very likable people. I don't know anything about them. But the prosecution's case was weak. They jumped too fast, I felt.
Well, maybe that's true, but I think she deserved. A little more than a.
Maybe she did.
That was an O.J. trial, man. If there ever was one. Yeah, you know, that was an O.J. trial. So it's like, what can
maybe.
I tell you?
Leo and I disagree on that.
I don't even care anymore because it's out of. As far as I'm concerned, she did.
But it was a great distraction from what was really going on, and that was the flotilla going from Greece to.
Yeah.
To Palestine, which didn't happen because of collusion of the Greeks and the Israelis.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It's just totally terrible.
It is. It's a real injustice what's happening to the Palestinian people, and that was all kept out of the American media.
Yep.
And it was filled by this Casey Anthony trial, and that's what people were interested in.
Well, you know, I think the ending of the trial later on today, they showed you was a lot of people who actually put flowers out where they found the body, supposedly, and it was a shrined area. You know, and here again, if nothing else, it brought people together. And I think, you know, it is one way of doing it, combining hearts, but I think people are more apt to think with their hearts now than they are with their head because there's so much of our lives now is just one big illusion. And, you know, I'm just grateful that, you know, something good came out of this. I mean, it's not great, but at least there was some love that was shared. And I'm sure this love will continue on. I hope it does, you know. I pray that it does. I pray for little Anthony, you know. Just think of the sacrifice that soul made, you know, maybe to bring something like this to us normal people. You know, to experience, and, you know, maybe that's what this thing is all about. But here again, I'm getting too esoteric. Go ahead.
I told you, George, I see it more as a distraction. It's a media contrived spectacle when we could have been focusing on what's happening to thousands of people in the Gaza Strip. They're being starved to death, and they're being imprisoned in their own land. And
I agree with you.
No attention paid to that, and that's where the love should be directed. I think that if we did have more love in this world and more compassion used with intelligence, then we'd have a much better world.
Yeah,
I agree with that. You know, I just feel bad that we don't have more control over our lives because it seems like big industry, you know, tells us what we can do and what we can't do. And, you know, this oil spill up in Montana, I've been following
awful?
The other day. That's terrible.
It's awful. And you don't hear anything about that, really.
No,
very
you
little.
Don't.
No, very, very little. But anyway, there's a lot of places where we could direct our love and have it have a real positive influence. And I hope we're better able to do that and that we get as much information as we need to have. But you were going to talk about...
The information is hard to get. You know, the only real news that I can get is coming from Russia. It's coming from Europe, from the news RT channel. You know, I'm getting more news of what's going on in the world than I do here in any of the media set up in this country. It's, you know, it's ludicrous. It really is. You know, to find out the weather patterns... I can go outside and I can find anything I want, but everything is restricted here, and you know it's just ludicrous. Don't you find it that way?
I told you that about 3 years ago. There was a poll that was done by 1,000 international reporters that asked what the and they from all over the world they reported they were to vote on who was the most censored
media
in the world. And out of 188 countries or so, they came up with the United States was number 23, right?
Yeah.
And Saudi Arabia was number 24. We were more censored than Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia is a friggin' dictatorship.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah. North Korea is number one, I think. But it's like the United States was only 23, all right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, Britain was another one. All these countries that claim freedom of the press, they're all the most restricted. It was absolutely amazing, you know? So that's why we try to do what we do here. You know, I don't know where else you're going to get this news, you know?
Well, it's hard to get it fresh news. In fact, newspapers I used to go to years ago, I'm restricted. I just can't go there, you know, using my normal carrier. And, you know, it's what's scary is that everything and anything you do on the Internet, you know, it can all come back to your station, to who you are and what you are. And, you know, with this Casey Anthony case, it was funny how they were able to tap in and look for the, you know, show the results of Googling, you know, for information. And that is scary. It's very scary.
That's why I don't use Google. I never do. But, I mean, Yahoo's probably just as bad. But I try to vary my search engines because of that, and I never use Google.
Mm-hmm.
But you know. That's
well, that's just one example, Leo. You know, this internet web. You know, you have no control other than the information that comes out of it.
Well, the only thing you can do to control it is to get rid of all your cookies. Number one, all right. Every time you sign out, and make sure nobody's tracking you that way. Do a complete scan, you know, after every day, and clean everything out. Make sure there's nothing intruding in your machine, right? And blocking all that out. So that's one way to do it. And
do you do that, Lila?
Is use very different, you know, as many different search engines as you can. And stay away from the major ones like Google or Yahoo, you know. As one I hate, I never use that one anymore, is Ask. You ever use that?
No.
That sucks. Don't ever bother. It's usually, you got to ask two or three times for anything reasonable to come up. That's a very restricted browser. But Ask Jeeves or something like that was the name of it. I don't even know if they have it anymore.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, you're right, lousy. But anyway, you know, I'm getting off the subject. What I wanted to talk to you tonight about, George, was what we were going to... I'm trying to feature you for Tuesday Thursday and Friday this week. You got a lot of stuff to talk about, especially with October 28th, and I was hoping... We might be able to get another guest on. Is that, you have any luck there?
Well, no, yeah. What we're going to do is Thursday night, we're going to touch base with Peter Moon again. He's going to take us to Romania.
How about Friday night?
I'm hoping, what I'd like to do is contact another person for Friday. Jeffrey Goodman. I'm trying to reach him. I may be speaking too soon, but you know, Jeffrey has agreed to come on back and doing another show with us. And I was hoping maybe we can do a Thursday Friday night back to back with Peter Moon talking about what's going on in Romania with the extraterrestrials and the underground tunnel systems. And with Jeffrey Goodman, with comets and asteroids that are foretold in a lot of the ancient writings that he wrote about.
That sounds very interesting, George.
I like very much, and especially with Peter Moon, I'd really like to talk to him more about that moon rise. Transylvania Moonrise, which is the second book.
Well, he's going back to Romania in August.
August, okay.
Yes, he's going there. I think he's got a conference he's going to attend, and he's hoping to hook up again with David Anderson. And Davis Anderson has been working with time travel and so forth for years. Yeah, and there's some other information that he wanted to talk to me about that hopefully we could talk Thursday on. And I think it's basically his quest right now to get into the mountain and find out as much information as he could. And what he did find that this was a lead-in from him from one of his masters. So this goes outside his normal connections, you know, with not only people like from the Montauk Project, as one example. He co-wrote several of their books. But I think it's just bringing a lot of his knowledge and esoteric knowledge to the front and putting it into useful understandings of our past and where we're going.
George, is he hooking up with David Anderson? Is that what you said?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay. And he's meeting him there?
Well, yes. I believe they're going to be part of a conference that David does annually, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And yes.
I remember him talking about that.
Yes.
And that's going to happen in August?
Yes, yes. In August, in September. I'm not sure how long he's going to be there, but I believe, you know, once he goes there, he's going to spend 2 or 3 weeks and may go into September. But David is interesting because he has several research buildings or places, and one of them is in Romania. He has one in New Mexico, and he also had one on Long Island for years, but I believe that one was closed down. But he still maintains his research facilities, and I think it's just tapping into what he has found out and what he's been able to work with and get an understanding of where this new science is that has sprung up, you know, from underneath us that we're just learning about now. And, you know, this puts quantum physics, I think, far behind us with the sense of understanding matter and energy. But, you know, I'm anxious to learn more about what he has to say, but he is on the top line when it comes to understanding physics, and maybe he can explain some of the activities that we're having right now on the sun. And, Leo, I talked with you earlier about this, you know, that the Mayans talked about the sun cycles that we are going through, and we are coming into a peak cycle, and there's some abnormalities throughout the solar system that is affecting us. And one effects of the solar blast has been a storm on Jupiter, the size of the Earth. Now, this is in the northern hemisphere, I believe. But it's just an abnormality, what we normally don't see. But they believe it's all connected with the solar storms that we're receiving right now.
And that, in fact, affects our weather as well.
Oh, yes, yes. And that is one of the reasons why we've had different weather patterns. And, well, you know, it's not only the wind and the waves and so forth, it's electromagnetics of the Earth. And that is being affected by the solar storms, but it's also offsetting part of our magnetism of the Earth. See, the magnetics of the Earth is depleting, and we have less of a magnetic pull on us. In fact, the Earth is actually slowing down, and these are part of the effects by these energy patterns that we're getting from the sun.
And with that happening, how does that affect human beings? If it's a, do you know, George?
Yeah, I think, it's the energy around us, the energy that we normally have around us. I could talk about the Schulmer resonance, which was a certain electrical charge, 7.8 hertz, that was around our bodies, and it was produced by lightning storms. And basically that is the electrical charge in the atmosphere. But that has gone from 7.8 hertz up to 12 hertz now. And, you know, normally you don't get a jump of energy like that. In fact, you know, for the last 2,000 or 200 years, you know, the electrical energy was about 7 hertz. But a change in the energy means that there's a change in the electrons and the protons that the sun is giving off. And that's what's affecting our DNA, and that's part of the changes that we're experiencing now. We're going through... we're going through another change. You know, if you want to take a fairy tale ride, you take a look at a human body as an android, and then we have different models, you know, type A, type O blood, type AB blood. And what's happening now is that more of our system, more of the genes in our chromosomes are activating themselves. Part of this activation is because of the energy that we're receiving. It's just a little higher frequency that it's opening up. And, you know, I've talked about some of these children that are being born now. They have more codexes or more computer programs, if you'd want to call it that, running in their DNA. And they have so much more than we do, in a sense that I think the energies we have around our body.
Now, you happen to mention the different blood types. So, are people with different blood types affected in different ways?
Well, I mentioned that just to show you that you know, we have changed, just like our eating patterns have changed. And you know, we can also go back the last 40, 50 years. That's changed there, but. Our diet actually changes, our body adapts to it. And when I talked about the different blood types and so forth, you know, at the very beginning we were a carnivorous being, where it wasn't until later on where we ate more herbs and vegetables, and our digestive system changed, our enzymes changed. And we were able to sustain ourselves, you know, on that type of food. And, you know, the body just had to adapt to it. And, you know, I can go way, way back to the different type of Homo sapiens, we, you know, with different colored blood. There has been four different types of blood that I know of that civilizations of antiquity did have. I think the early Egyptians, some of the Egyptians, they had like a golden blood. And Isis and Osiris, a lot of times you see them depicted in green, in a green makeup. But they were green-blooded beings, I believe. But, you know, we're getting off the path here a bit. But, you know, on the humans changed, we are changing, and the energies that we're receiving from the sun or our environment is changing us. And that's what we're experiencing.
Now, you caught me on the green people. I was just wondering, were they somehow affected by photosynthesis, like plants and like plants or something? They have green blood.
Well, I don't know, Leo. You know, you could raise that, but I believe
blood too, which is the blue blood. Yeah, but
you can't mix it with the blood from the. The humanoids that live in the inner earth, and they are blue or green, a greenish hue to them because of the minerals within the earth. This is part of you know, the legends and so forth that I've tapped into, and that was the only thing that I knew of people who are green and blue. They came from the inner earth, but I found differently.
I hope we can talk to Peter on that, because he talks about that in his book. Especially the blue rays.
Oh yeah, he's a specialist on that.
He's a what?
He's a specialist when it comes to the different blue bloods.
Oh, specialist.
The different blood types and following the blood lines. Peter has done that, and he has written about it too.
Right.
Yeah.
He's a fascinating writer. He's a lot of good stuff. But we're really looking forward to that. So he'll be on Thursday night.
Yes,
And Friday night we will have possibly Goodman.
Right. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of him. But what I'd like to do is continue on, you know, with what's going on with the sun and how it's affecting.
Can we get Peter on both nights or what?
Well, I don't know. I'll talk with him. Leo, you know, another thing that's going on right now is the earthquakes and the flooding.
Yeah.
And I want to focus in on that just a bit, because there is a problem right now, and I just like to touch upon it.
Yeah, absolutely, sure. So that's
we'll look
problem.
We'll look greatly forward to that tomorrow and Friday, possibly Friday. So
right,
that's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
You were telling me that you believe strongly that the 28th of October is going to be quite a period. You think, right?
Yeah, I really do. I'm not getting scared in a sense, but you know, I don't know. I think that it's going to be a hell of a ride because I don't believe how fast the summer is going, and yet it's right around the corner, and there's so many things that are going out of nowhere. You know, the flotilla is just it's just one example. You know, that's not small, that's big. I mean, there are millions of people behind that. And
no, you're not going to hear the end of that either. I mean, you just won't hear the end of that.
Well,
but
I would like to see the end of it. I would like to see him go and land and bring those supplies. That's the ending. There's no other ending.
But you know, George, I think that was a done deal before it even began.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. But
think,
you know what?
I think they were duped.
Well,
I
okay.
Really,
I don't know. I think everyone was pretty strong. I think they got a lot more attention than they ever expected them to have. And I think that shattered and shook the U.S. and Israel, all right, in order to make them. They became assholes, jerks, complete international jerkos. To stop this Palestinian this flotilla, and it made them look like idiots to do so.
That's why
and,
it's all been suppressed in the U.S. press.
Oh yeah, you know, not a word mentioned in the U.S. press about it. Nowhere.
Let me ask you something, Leo. What do you think of this Gaddafi situation, Libya?
Well,
Libya
is demanding that they're planning to fight to the end. Because they're being, we just read where the
African
50 African nations just said screw you to the
criminal courts.
Over this.
Because they vetoed it.
Yeah.
Huh?
Over trying Gaddafi for war crimes. All right. When you got and they're saying what it was so hypocritical because you got guys like Bush and Cheney and Sarkozy
and Obama
and all these guys.
Genocide and war crimes that nobody,
right. And
nobody
torture and everything else, and nobody's convicting them. But you go after a guy like Gaddafi, all right, whose country was attacked by NATO, all right?
Okay.
Unprovoked and attacked, all right? He didn't provoke anything like that. You know, it was a rebellion, and he put down his own rebellion. If that happened in this country, it would have might have made some news, but everyone said no, put him in jail. You know, nobody would have gone after Obama. You know what I mean? So it's like it's a complete and utter joke and a farce. But that's part of what the system's become, and I think that's why the whole world is getting antsy and crazy in their own country. They want to tear down all of these corrupt systems. Greece definitely wants to tear down its own country, its government. You know, it's going to get much worse.
They didn't want to accept that IMF loan.
No, and the people did not. And the prime minister got really cozy with Israel. Israel bailed them out, all right, and so they wound up kicking out the flotilla people. But the austerity movement there. And the strike movements and stuff in Greece are going to get worse and worse and worse, and it's just going to boil over.
Because people feel they have nothing to lose.
Yeah, I'll tell you. And I'll tell you something right now. The minute it's revealed that what the United States has been doing, all right, once the United States people wake the hell up to what's happening, all right, that they're being robbed, blind, all right.
And when they wake up, what can they do?
What are they going to do? They'll hit the streets. They will hit the streets.
What will they do when they hit the streets? What could be done? I'm looking for kind of saving grace here, you know.
I think they could very well march on Congress. If you destroy the entire middle class, all right, you destroy that middle class, and you suddenly have your country goes into default, and all of a sudden they take away everything, and your pensions, and your Social Security, and your, you know, tell you you can't retire until you're 75 or something, and you know, things like that. You know, trust me. There are going to be people in the streets, all right? And there are serious people, and millions and millions and millions, and they'll take over the Capitol building, you know? It's what's going
to
happen.
Because they feel that they won't have
anything
to lose.
I mean, what do you got to lose? You lost your house, you lost your job, you lost your health. All you got left is your gun and a pitchfork, you know what I mean? It's like they had in the old days. So it's like, believe me, I think that may very well happen.
Right? Leo, it's not that it won't happen, but what do you do when that does happen? What can you do?
You get rid of the sons of bitches and you start something new, you know?
And that's
and
something to be talked about anyway. We're right at the top of the hour now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, I mean, the worst thing I read tonight was the fact that Geithner plans to leave in this month from the Treasury Secretary.
Yeah.
Because he knows the shit's going to hit the fan in August, and he doesn't want to be around when
it's going
to
happen. He doesn't want to be the guy that's there.
He doesn't want to be, and once they find out that he was the guy that milked all the government pensions of something like $300 billion or $400 billion already to pay off the national debt, he's going to be a wanted man.
That's a huge middle class.
Yeah.
Huge number of people.
You're talking about the state. You're talking about government, federal government employees, okay? And there's over 3 million of them, all right?
And they're going to be pretty unhappy.
Right.
So there's a lot that's going on. But anyway, we're at the top of the hour, and we look forward to talking to you more tomorrow.
Yeah, Thursday.
And
not tomorrow, but Thursday.
Thursday and on Friday with our guests. And we thank you very much for calling.
Thanks for being on, George.
Thanks for being on.
Okay.
Well, thanks for having me. I always enjoy talking to you guys.
Stay tuned with us and listen to Woody in the Ring. We're going to bring him on, and we'll talk to you Thursday.
Stay tuned.
Okay, you got
George.
John on tonight?
What's up? No, John's not able to be on for a while.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll be listening.
All right.
Okay.
Good night, folks.
And then we got some helpful stuff and stuff to do. We got a pretty good show coming up for you. So hang in there, George, and we'll talk to you on Thursday.
All right. Good night, now.
All right.
Good night.
And that was George Dixon. Now we're bringing up Woody in the Ring.
And we're going to have Woody's music, if I can find it.
Woody's music.
Woody opening. There it is. And then.
World Cup, NFL news, and a lot of New York baseball stuff. But let's get right down to it. Only the topic on my segment, the guy's just never ending, Roger Clemens. At one frustrating moment during a long day of testimony before a U.S. House panel probing steroid use in Major League Baseball, Roger Clemens seemed to highlight the jeopardy he confronted, as only the most decorated pitcher in the history of the game could. "This is harder than the bases loaded," Clemens told congressional investigators, following repeated denials that he had ever used performance-enhancing drugs during a career that had spanned more than two decades. "I hate being in these situations, but I'm here because I want to set the record straight." Yeah, right. More than 3 years later, much of what Clemens told congressional investigators that February and later in televised testimony before the full House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform represents the heart of the federal trial that starts Wednesday. The trial features Clemens as criminal defendant, not the dominant athlete once known as the Rocket. Clemens, 48, is charged with lying to Congress when he emphatically denied accusations by a former trainer who told House investigators and members of Congress that he personally injected the pitching great with illegal steroids and human growth hormone, of course banned by Major League Baseball. In all, Clemens is charged with six criminal counts, including obstruction of Congress. For Clemens, the personal and professional stakes loom larger than his broad, hulking frame. If convicted, Clemens faces the permanent stain of a felony record, of course, and up to 21 months in prison under federal sentencing guidelines. His once bulletproof baseball legacy, built on 7 Cy Young Awards as the best pitcher in the sport, 354 career wins, and a once sure nomination to baseball's Hall of Fame, also hangs in the balance. If there is a conviction, there is no chance he makes the Hall of Fame in the modern age, former baseball commissioner Fay Vincent says. Even if he's acquitted, I don't think he gets in for a long while. All this case is going to do, I think, is destroy Roger Clemens. Personally, I agree with former Commissioner Fay Vincent on this topic. I disagree with him on many others, but on this instance, I definitely agree with Vincent. This trial is going to do nothing but make things worse for Roger Clemens. Major League Baseball, they're eager to move past an era of steroid use. The Clemens trial represents an ugly distraction. It comes only 3 months after home run king Barry Bonds was convicted of obstructing justice following a 7-year investigation into the slugger's use of performance-enhancing drugs. Now, there are striking parallels in the Bonds and Clemens cases. Both involve baseball's biggest names of their generation, and both are built on evidence that players lied about their alleged use of steroids and other performance enhancers. But when jury selection begins here Wednesday, legal analysts think the government will bring a stronger case against Clemens than what Bonds faced in his trial. The case against Clemens includes witnesses who claim they were aware of Clemens' drug use and the man who allegedly injected him, personal trainer Brian McNamee. I think the government feels they have a very tight case, as former federal prosecutor Billy Martin, who represented several troubled professional athletes, including Eagles quarterback Michael Vick. With the Bonds case behind them, the government has a roadmap to go by. This probably is going to be extremely unpleasant. U.S. District Judge Reggie Walton has issued a strict gag order prohibiting Clemens and his attorneys, as well as prosecutors, from commenting outside the courtroom. But court documents and transcripts of congressional testimony indicate the trial will expose witnesses, many of them drawn from high-profile world of professional sports, to bare-knuckle legal tactics that could leave a trail of betrayal and broken friendships. Andy Pettit, another former New York Yankee pitching great and Clemens' close friend, represents one of the government's most important witnesses. Pettit is expected to claims by McNamee that Clemens used HGH. Now, Clemens' attorney is Rich Harden. Harden, as many of you may or may not know, actually represented the estate of the oil great who was married to Anna Nicole Smith. When, you know, the oil great, they supposedly left all the money to Anna Nicole Smith, the sons of the Texas oil baron contested, and Harden basically just tore Anna Nicole Smith up, made her look like pretty much what she was, a gold digger, so on and so forth, and just totally wrecked her credibility, and she didn't get one dime of the hundreds of millions of dollars. Now,
you know,
I assume...
You know what happened? The poor guy, the son who was suing against her, the poor bastard died of a heart attack like before the hearing.
He never got the money either.
He never got it either.
Oh, isn't that always the way? I'm sure the state of Texas had no problem claiming the money. Anyway. Right. Anyway, I assume this is going to be Harden's tactic. He's going to try and pay McNamee as a person who's been arrested for, you know, steroid trafficking, this and that. He's a rat looking to get his head out of his noose, looking for publicity, so on and so forth. Roger Clemens, you know, on the other hand, has been in the sport for years, highly respected, so on and so forth. But frankly, I think it's an uphill battle. Clemens is just going to come out of this really tarnished. No matter what, win or lose, Clemens is going to lose. My personal opinion is that when this came out months ago, Clemens should have just kept his mouth shut, because let me tell you this, Clemens is guilty, Clemens definitely was juicing, Clemens was definitely taking HGH. Nobody, I repeat, nobody gets better past the age of 35 or 36 in professional sports. Your skills do not stay the same, or in Clemens' case, get better. They deteriorate. Just ask Derek Jeter. That's what happens. Father Time does what he does. You get slower. You get weaker. You don't get quicker, and you don't get faster. That's just what Father Time does. He steals your speed, and he steals your strength. Apparently, Roger Clemens was a freak of nature. He was given speed and strength as he got older, unlike everyone else. Or at least, that's what they're going to want you to believe. But that's not the case. Me personally, being a Yankee fan, I, when I had Clemens on my team, I liked him. Hard guy. Had no problem dusting dudes off, getting dudes up off the plate and everything else. But, you know, he's a bit of a scumbag. And frankly, I think he's gotten poor legal representation. Should have kept his mouth shut. Listen, if you know you're guilty, don't swear from the highest mountaintop how innocent you are, especially when you're going up against Congress, because in the end, you're going to lose. You don't beat the feds. Nobody beat the feds. It's just like nobody beats the Wiz. Nobody beats the feds. Mark my words, Clemens is going to go down in a ball of flames, guaranteed. But it's going to be fun to watch, because there's going to be guys such as Andy Pettit, Jason Giambi, all kinds of baseball people are going to be getting on the stand, and it should be very interesting. Some stuff's going to come out. And also, you know, McNamee's going to be kind of hard to discredit. He is a former police officer. But it should be very interesting. As I said, Rusty Harden, you know, he totally tarnished Anna Nicole Smith. Of course, you know, she was an easy target. But, you know, this should be interesting, and it's going to be ugly. So, anyway, moving on. Women's World Cup is taking place. Now, what is that, Women's World Cup? Well, That is a bunch of chicks with mullets that run around kicking a soccer ball around, or as they say in Europe, a football, on a field somewhere along the size of Area 51. And then they score a goal, and they run around in their tight shorts, and people are yelling, "Goal! Goal! Goal!" And the fans are much like the kind of people that you find at Fenway Park, drunk, stupid, and dressed badly. So, if that's of any interest to you, the women will be facing Sweden, the United States women will be facing Sweden, I believe, tomorrow. And if you want to get drunk, have a bad haircut, and act stupid, well, hey, then go ahead and watch the game. And if you'd like to call in and give me the score and the blow-by-blow, feel free to do so next week. But I'll probably make fun of you, so I wouldn't do that either. Moving on to a little bit of football news. All righty. As you know, this is a crucial week for the NFL. Owners and players enter what could be a very critical week for talks on a collective bargaining agreement as the opening of training camps looms less than 3 weeks away. The sides are expected to resume negotiations today in New York City, although NFL spokesman Greg Aiello's tweeted Saturday that the sides did not take the holiday weekend off. Lawyers are drafting language for potential agreement, sharing it with the PA. All kinds of phone, email exchanges are going on. Work continues. NFL and the NFL Network said much headway was made during Thursday's 15-hour session in Minneapolis on the main issue, how to divide more than $9 billion in annual revenue. Yeah, like they want to have a lockout. But differences remain on other issues such as rookie salary cap and funding for retired players, which in my mind is really key. The funding for the retired players has really got to be addressed. You got a lot of these guys that have only played a few years in the game and their bodies are just so banged up that, you know, something really has to be done for them. I've talked about this before. Life in the NFL is not a long one. Not everybody plays 10 years or 8 years. Not everybody is Peyton Manning, you know? So something definitely has to be done. Anyway, moving on. A lot of baseball news in New York, both for the Mets and for the Yankees. I'm going to start with the Mets. Jose Reyes' left hamstring tweak may be the best injury that has ever happened to the Mets, at least for right now. This injury is a gentle, discouraging reminder to other teams that Reyes is always a hamstring injury away from serious danger. The Mets have to re-sign Reyes. They absolutely have to. They know it. He is far too valuable. He is too much of a fan favorite to let him get away. As a guy at the New York Post reported on Monday, General Manager Sandy Alderson is now leaning strongly toward authorizing a substantial offer after the season to try and to retain Reyes, who is set to become a free agent. Reyes is not going to give the Mets a hometown discount. Reyes definitely wants to get paid. After hanging with the Mets for half a season, Alderson knows what those who have been around for the Mets know for years. Reyes, who sat out his second straight game last night at Dodger Stadium, is the key to the franchise. The numbers speak for themselves, but it is more than numbers. No one is more electric and plays the game with as much energy as Reyes, and Reyes does love New York. According to Reyes, Reyes said, "The people are so good of New York. There are a lot of people from the Dominican. Everybody wants to play in New York. Everything is in New York. There is nothing to worry about except playing baseball. That's why I love it." What's not to love? And if the Mets make a decent offer, Reyes will be a hero for staying with the club. If he jumps to another city and has the pressure of being a star of a new team, he may not be able to handle it. I don't know. I think the Mets might actually get this one done. This hamstring injury, frankly, I think the Mets hope that it's, you know, not a major one, but, you know, somewhere between major and minor. Just enough to keep other teams hesitant to give him that Carl Crawford kind of money, that 7 years, $140 million, whatever the case may be. I think the Mets would love to get away with 5 years, $100 million, something along those lines. They definitely need to keep Reyes. The guy definitely makes their offense go. That part, what's funny about Reyes is the Mets built this park, and at the time, David Wright was the face of the franchise. You know, he was the home run hitter and everything else. And he got the better contract at the time than Reyes did. He got the longer contract. And the park that the Mets built is contrary to David Wright's skills. He can't hit home runs here. But it feeds right into Jose Reyes' game. Guy is leading the league in triples. Right now he has, I believe, 15 triples. He would set the record, like, if he gets, like, 30 triples this year. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, because the place is really cavernous. It's extremely hard for a lot of guys to hit home runs. But for guys like Reyes, who sprays the ball, who has speed, I mean, it's the perfect park for a guy like him. It's just kind of funny the way things happen, you know. Just the way it happens. Just very funny. But, you know, they definitely need to make this happen at the end of the season. If they don't, I mean, you think they have attendance problems now. I mean, people are really going to abandon ship if they don't have some semblance of a team. But in order for them to sign Reyes, I mean, K-Rod's going to have to go because he's dangerously close to getting the number of games needed for that bonus where he gets like $17 million or something like that. So, I mean, they got to get rid of K-Rod. Obviously, they're going to have to get Beltran's got to go. I mean, they got to get rid of some guys here at the All-Star break in order to be able to make an offer for Reyes. It just absolutely has to happen. And that definitely bears watching. Speaking of the All-Star break, I think it was kind of shitty of Ron Washington not to bring CeCe Sabathia to the All-Star game. Instead, he brought his guy, CJ Wilson, who's absolutely garbage. Totally an unfair maneuver. What he should have done was Sabathia's pitching, I believe, on Sunday anyway, and he would be unavailable for the All-Star game. So he should have picked him. Then he could have declined, and then he could have just taken his guy anyway. But instead, he just took CJ Wilson, and the numbers just don't bear up. But, you know, if you look at the All-Star game every year, I mean, there's some guy who should have went, another guy who didn't go. I mean, you know, by all rights, Dave Robertson should go. I mean, the number of strikeouts this guy's got, I mean, he has been like the Iceman this year for the Yankees. I mean, he seriously has been just absolutely fantastic. And you really got to tip your hat to Robertson. The guy's ice cold. You put him in any situation, he just comes in and handles his business. Speaking of handling business, Derek Jeter is back from his calf injury. Certainly came back quicker than Jimmy Rollins of the Philadelphia Phillies predicted. You know, as I said, everyone's body is different. And, you know, I didn't care too much for what Rollins had to say. I could care less what he has to say about injuries or anything else. But Jeter's back. He went 0-for-4 last night, but he's got a couple hits tonight, and he looks pretty sharp. People are talking about moving him down the lineup, you know, as soon as he gets his 3,000th hit. Frankly, I don't see that happening. You know, it probably won't happen until next year. Jeter batting 260 or 270 is not going to make or break the Yankees, to be honest with you. Just leave him at the top of the lineup where he belongs for now. If you want to move him down the lineup next year, that's fine. But I'm not a big believer in tweaking with the lineup at this stage of the game. You know, everyone happens to be in the right spot as it is right now. You know, so we're just going to have to leave it the way it is. Mariano Rivera's shoulder is a little bit sore. I guess his triceps are a little bit sore. He was unavailable for tonight's game. People are a little bit concerned. As you know, Rivera is 41 years old. Right now, he's second in the American League with 21 saves. You know, Yeah, you know, he's sore after pitching, a little soreness after pitching, which probably is kind of normal. You know, it's not during pitching, so it's after pitching. So, you know, that's okay. He probably could go tonight if necessary, but, you know, they're not going to pitch him, obviously. My personal opinion is I think he just doesn't want to go to the All-Star game, probably wants a couple days off, and frankly, Rivera, if he doesn't want to go to the All-Star game, he deserves it. You know, he's put his time in. If he doesn't want to go to the All-Star game and fly out to Arizona and deal with all that stuff, you know what? I wouldn't want to do it either. I'd say my tricep is hurting too. So that's just me. Anything else for the Yankees? I want to talk about, you know, back to Jeter just for a minute. You know, even though his bat has definitely slowed down, the one thing that the Yankees have certainly missed is just the continuity of routine ground balls. If you saw the Mets game the other night where the Yankees did lose and Rivera blew the save, some simple ground balls went right through the dude's legs. I mean, Jeter would never miss those kind of balls. Jeter makes all the plays. Even though his range isn't what it used to be, he makes the plays he's supposed to make. He turns the double play. The routine ground ball, he handles his business. And that kind of stuff is still important. And the Yankees are so explosive in so many other areas that him batting 260 or 270 really should not be an issue. And, you know, it just seems like people just want to keep making more of it, making more of it, making more of it. I don't think it's that big of an issue. You know, he's a shortstop, and the Yankees certainly have offense from many other areas. So I think they can afford to have a shortstop that hits 270 or 280. But, you know, that's just my opinion. And that'll do it for this week. Shout out to all my Woodheads out there. Ron, Mark, Leo, Dino, Troy, Greg at AFS, Phaedra up in Boston. Now we got some warm weather. Let's all try to enjoy it. Until next week, out.
Thank you, Woody. and the Fish.
Woodstock. And there's one more that I think this is the, I'm not sure if this is the same one.
You're like an interesting guy.
I just wanted to hear the original opening of that, which I thought was fascinating.
Still going on today.
Yeah, it was very good.
Drums of war are beaten.
Time gone. This was another, they got all these great Woodstock. It's
yeah.
Over 40 years old now, you know?
Yeah, well, it's still relevant.
It's incredible. But anyway, there were some wonderful songs there. But that is probably one of the most moving songs that they did, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
So, Country Joe McDonald, Dogs, Bush, George Bush, a new song.
Well, let's go.
Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, and I want to thank everyone for
that was our
putting
music
up with that
break.
One. That was our musical break. And let's see. I wanted to talk about this one, and possibly, let's see, media. I thought this was kind of interesting.
Media tests,
yeah.
Americans on Independence
magazine.
Day.
Yeah.
Alex Jones, InfoWars, is a war for your mind.
Right, and it's a little segment there on he's got a video, but Time Magazine. Says, does it still matter? And that's the Constitution of the United States. It says, I was shocked over the weekend to witness a full-scale talking point in the media demonizing our founders in the precious Constitution. Please comment below examples. And he goes on.
But here, let's play what Alex Jones has to say.
Yeah, that's a little long, but it's not. But maybe it's worth. I think it's worth listening to.
More than 235 years ago, our forebears signed the Declaration of Independence. It was a revolutionary document. The men that signed it were signing their death warrant. They knew that the greatest imperial power the world had ever seen was coming after them. This is an important July 4th message. I intended to take this day off and celebrate the liberties we've still got left today. But over the weekend and today, ABC News, Time Magazine, all over the place, without even trying to tune in, there was this message that the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence was outdated and bad and evil. There's a lot of different attacks I've seen them launching over the years, but the main one is that it's outdated like a horse and buggy whip compared to the automobile, when it's the opposite. The ideas enshrined in the Declaration of Independence, Constitution, Bill of Rights, are the foundation of all modern liberty and freedom and jurisprudence. It's been the model of freedom, whether you were in Asia, from Japan right through what's Pakistan and India today, to Europe, Africa, Mesoamerica. All of these systems were tyrannical. The people were complete slaves. They had corrupt ruling classes that dominated them and kept the underclasses uneducated and poor as a mode to control them. This is the history of humans. And the Declaration of Independence and the ideas that are enshrined in it was the flower of the Enlightenment, the greatest expression of the Renaissance. Everything good in Western culture, private property, the right to defend yourself, the right to practice your own religion or not practice a religion. All of these things were enshrined and more. The right to control your own family and not have the state come take your children away to conscript them to be slaves. This was revolutionary. And it is now under assault, not by something new and better, but by all the same old ideas that tyrants have brought forward. And they have all these fake intellectuals on the controlled left and rights is bad, how it's antiquated, how in this age of space shuttles and computers, we don't need it, and how did the farmers who were the founders, they think that they could, create a document that would survive into the future. Well, I'll tell you what hadn't changed is human nature. And humans act exactly the same. You read that Declaration of Independence about checkpoints and home searches without warrants and out-of-control taxes and regulations and police brutality. Read the Declaration of Independence. It's only a page long. The system does not want you to read it. It's about kangaroo courts and being, basically taken to faraway places. And everything that's happening now, the illegal wars, the secret arrest, the torture, the usurpation, the taxation without representation, the big foreign multinational corporate British empire controlled by corporate interests coming in and setting up laws to cheat little people. It's the same old globalism we were fighting as the new globalism, the modern neo-colonial mercantilism. And that's why the system is demonizing the Bill of Rights and Constitution. That's why they're coming out against it. Because America is being imploded, just like Greece, just like Ireland, and every other major industrialized country by the Ponzi scheme banking cartel. And the Bill of Rights and the Constitution stands in the way of that. It's all over the news today that Greece is losing almost all their liberties, the birthplace of democracy, that they are losing all their sovereignty, the private cartel that came in and induced them to get into the Ponzi scheme that was impossible to pay back. We are controlled by those same interests. And so they are... We've always known they're attacking the Bill of Rights and Constitution, the Second Amendment, the First Amendment. But now they're out in the open telling us how great it is to get rid of it, how wonderful it is to not have warrants, how great it is to be spied on, how wonderful it is to have open borders. It's a corporate global government, a new bank of the world that we'll pay our carbon taxes to. It's total tyranny by the new aristocratic class that's basically merged with the old elites. And to just see talk radio, the internet, Newsweek, newspapers, everywhere I go, there is the talking points of attacking the Bill of Rights and Constitution. And, of course, there's the other talking point of, well, some of the founders had slaves. The whole world had slaves at that time. It was these ideas that said that individuals innately had an organic right to not be slaves. And it was those ideas that led to the end of slavery all over the world. Now we have more modern types of debt slavery and bureaucratic slavery that we're under. In many areas of the world still have slavery, but you never hear these academics talking about that. Why do they attack the Bill of Rights and Constitution? Why do they attack the Declaration of Independence? Because it is the most modern idea. It's the system that created all this wealth and ingenuity, and that's why it's under attack. We're going from liberty into corporate collectivism. Anti-free market, anti-capitalism. It's called crony capitalism, but it's not even really capitalism. It's a crony, insider, monopoly man system that has declared war on the Bill of Rights and Constitution and your family. When you see someone on the news demonizing the Constitution, Bill of Rights, demonizing the 4th of July, it's because they're globalists. They're corporate agents who are not free market, who want to usurp and enslave you and your family, and it should make your blood boil. We've known they've been eroding it for a long time from behind the scenes at the edges. Now they're destroying the heart of the document in front of everyone. Obama is launching wars and telling Congress he doesn't need to even get any approval from them to do it in total violation of the Constitution. Once you get away from rules and checks and balances on power, you have a tyranny. And finally we see Ron Paul and even liberals like Nadler, the congressman, saying Obama is becoming a emperor, and the next president will have that power as well. And so the corporate offshore interests, through their puppet emperors, have total control over us, and our shields, our hedge of protection, is dropped. Okay. They're scared of the spirit of 1776 and July 4th for a reason. They demonize it for a reason, because it's the equivalent of holy water and a silver cross to vampires. Discover its power. Save the republic. Discover the spirit of liberty and defeat the New World Order. That's it.
That was Alex Jones. He's absolutely right.
Yep.
I have to agree with him 100% on that.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. I don't know.
And that's stupid Congress we have is just a rubber stamp for our corporate.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we are in sick shape.
Well, yeah, we are. We're in serious trouble. I agree with him.
Yeah, but fortunately, I don't know. Maybe there are enough
people that'll stand up.
Maybe.
When Ron Paul and Kucinich speak out, maybe there'll be others.
I wanted to play this. I know we did a lot of flotilla stuff tonight, but there was just one small piece that I wanted to talk tonight on or play. The organizers of a Gaza flotilla banned from leaving a Greek port say they are determined to continue their campaign, and the activists say Israel have pressured them to pressure Greece. And this is a YouTube video.
The changing of the guard outside the Greek parliament, a magnet for tourists in these summer months. And changing, too, the relationship between Greece and Israel, reflected in official figures that show a 50% increase in Israeli visitors over the past year. In this period, the number of Israeli tourists to neighboring Turkey has dropped by nearly 90%, one relationship weakening as the other grows stronger. The beginning of this process can be tracked to Israel's war in Gaza, vehemently opposed by the Turkish government, which downgraded what had been very close diplomatic and military ties as a result. Then, just over a year ago, Israeli commandos boarded a Turkish vessel bound for Gaza. Nine activists aboard the Mavi Marmara were killed in the operation, and relations between Israel and Turkey reached an all-time low. There's a political vacuum that was soon filled. In July last year, George Papandreou became the first Greek prime minister to visit Israel in more than three decades. For Israel, it heralded the opening of a new friendly window to West and East. The relationship became further cemented a few months later when Benjamin Netanyahu became the first Israeli leader to pay an official visit to Greece, a nation that for decades had been one of the greatest supporters of the Palestine Liberation Organization, had now also become Israel's new best friend. It's a relationship based on mutual need. In its financial meltdown, Greece has been urgently searching for new markets and a different source of its economic lifeblood, tourism. For its part, Israel was desperately searching for new friends in the region. So both Israel and Greece have achieved what they wanted. But the long-term impact on Greece's always prickly relationship with Turkey is still to be gauged. And in all this change, too, one more thing to be clarified. The impact of these regional power shifts on a wider Middle East peace process, one that has remained dormant throughout. Mike Hanna, Al Jazeera, Athens.
So that's why the flotilla didn't leave.
That's exactly why it didn't leave.
And because they got that loan and accepted it.
Yep.
So now they're slaves to the...
To the system, and
they'll do as they're told.
There's going to be a lot of stuff going on, and a lot more protests there because those people are not giving up at all.
I hope they don't.
I wanted to read a couple of health items tonight, but I also wanted to read this before we go on. That's quick, but it's Gaddafi threatens West and with retaliation. Right, just click it up right there. Gaddafi threatens West with retaliation. This is a quote. We have to fight for our country, and you are going to be legitimate targets for us, Saif al-Islam told the French TV channel TFI. On Friday, Gaddafi threatened to attack Europe if NATO refused to stop airstrikes on the country. That's amazing, isn't it? Saif al-Islam said Libyan authorities are prepared to make concessions to end the conflict, but will fight on their homeland. We will never surrender. We will fight. It's our country.
Hmm.
And that's Gaddafi's son said this, and this is by Press TV. He emphasized that the Western powers will lose their military campaign against Libya. You are not going to win. You have no chance, zero chance, to win the war here. He noted that France and other Western countries launched war against Libya because they had lost their interest in the oil-producing country. If you are angry with us because we are not buying the Rafale airplanes,
You should talk with us, he said. He's talking about the French.
Sources say that Paris had been trying to sell Rafale jet fighter aircraft to Tripoli before the uprising against Gaddafi. You are angry with us because oil deals are not going well. You should talk to us. Rebels will not give you anything because they're not going to win. Salaf al-Islam also rejected calls for his father to quit Libya. To tell my father to leave the country is a joke. The Libyan regime has also called for volunteers to take up arms to fight the revolutionary forces who are battling to oust Gaddafi from power after 4 decades in power. A popular uprising to oust Gaddafi began in mid-February. The protests then turned into an armed conflict after the government's deadly crackdown on demonstrators. Revolutionary force want an end to Gaddafi's decade-long rule. NATO has recently intensified its attack on Libya in an alleged attempt to increase pressure on longtime ruler Gaddafi. The U.S.-led military alliance also admits that its forces have killed dozens of civilians and wounded several others in the ongoing early attack on key Libyan cities. Experts say the main motive behind the Western attack on Libya is the vast oil reserves of the country.
Yeah, yeah, we're sure of that. Yeah, absolutely.
National resources, that's all.
Absolutely. I mean, it's questioning what.
And because they wanted to get rid of the dollar.
You know, it's terrible to be put in this position, but I swear to God, I mean, as an American citizen, to be totally against your country's policies, you know, it's really a dilemma in a way, because...
I mean,
you know,
I love this country.
I love the country. I love what it stands for, but by God, it's being destroyed by these crazy people that we have elected. These absolute crazy people that are, you know, these greedy corporate.
I can't
bastards.
Say that they're elected. They're bought and paid for.
They're bought and paid for, but they're allowed to be by our Supreme Court and by the people themselves who just are, you know.
Well, they don't put up anybody to vote for.
No.
It doesn't matter really who you vote for; they're all the same.
No, I mean you just got to get rid of this two-party system. You got to dump these people, and you got to dump the system and start and build something new. I mean, if we're supposed to be democratic, then let's build
the democracy. The original system was very good. Let's just go back to that and get rid of these corporate.
It survived 200 years, but it may not survive this.
Yeah.
You know, these corporate bastards, and the greed. So I don't know, but. As far as I'm concerned, it's not a happy.
Well, it's the left versus right political charade, and that's what they're talking about in the following article.
I would do this, but this is it's very true.
But people can go to this and look at this.
I would prefer that people went to this. This is Henry Macau, and he's a Illuminati researcher. And he just says the left versus right political charade. But where he got this is, this is from a book.
Quite long. Accurately reflects, let's just read that little caption. The left versus right accurately reflects our careful, artificial polarization of the population on phony issues that prevents the issue of our money or power from arising in their minds. That's all. It's a distraction.
It's from a book. This is an excerpt from a book, The Occult Technology of Power, which is a manual published in 1974 that purports to instruct an Illuminati heir. So it's fascinating.
But it's a bit long.
It's kind of long, but it's very fascinating. Henry Macow, MAKOW.com. Check that out. SaveTheWhales.ca as well. And hope you check that out because it's an interesting one. But there's also something else that something here that I wanted to go to, that on Bill Gates and the vaccinations.
I think that's toward the end.
Is it? They're trying to push secretly approved GM corn in Pakistan, leads to resignation of chief GM regulator. Attempts by biotechnology giant Monsanto to thwart proper approval process of its GM corn in Pakistan has led to a massive outcry by various stakeholders who recognize they have been deliberately ignored and betrayed by their own government.
And they're pushing that genetically modified food all over the world.
and the uproar against the high-level corruption has been so strong in recent days that Dr. Iftikhar Ahmad, head of the government subcommittee that tries to secretly aid Monsanto's efforts to push through its GM corn, recently resigned from his position.
And don't forget, the United States has 400 times the cancer rate.
That's right.
And since the introduction of all this genetically modified food.
And most of the, and all the other countries in the world refuse to accept our grain exports, okay, because of the, if they're genetically modified. So
they recognize that it's not safe. It hasn't been proven safe, and it isn't
and
safe.
It isn't safe, and most countries will not accept our genetically modified grains or beef.
Because they consume it.
Right. With growth hormones and stuff like that. It's a deliberate attempt to keep these discussions and proceedings in low profile in order to avoid an outcry by the farmers and conscious citizens at some outside sources to Pakistan International News concerning the committee's unethical behavior. According to Pakistan's Ministry of Food and Agriculture, officials have been meeting privately with Monsanto to discuss the mass cultivation of GM corn instead of appropriately holding open meetings where stakeholders and other public input can be received. Besides holding pragmatic scientific debate, there should be extensive public debate in this important issue as it deals with what we eventually eat out of the stakeholders. Also, not only did the committee members in question help Monsanto try to bypass the rules for GM approval, they also allowed large-scale field trials of GM corn to occur without approval. They even tried to adopt the findings of these illegitimate trials, which, of course, were compiled by Monsanto, instead of performing an independent review and petitioning for an environmental impact report. Upon his departure, Ahmad tried to invoke pity by claiming that outsiders had unfairly hatched prejudice against his committee by accusing it of scandalous behavior. But the fact speaks for themselves, illustrating that now, what now happens all around the world when Monsanto infiltrates governments and pulls the strings of the corrupt and gullible to get its Franken crops, illegally approved. It seems the valid concerns expressed about the GM crops have been sidelined under pressure from the seed company. And concerning Monsanto's strategy of lying to government officials and to farmers about the supposed genetic benefits of genetically modified crops in order to grease the wheels for fast-track approval. So they're being lied to.
Same old
bullshit. But, I mean, if you want to read this article, go to naturalnews.com and check it out.
And you can get a lot of other really good health articles.
This is another reason why Monsanto is so hated, but also the United States is hated in Pakistan, you know. And others.
And everywhere else.
Yeah. It's just unbelievable. I don't know. We got about 5 more minutes. Let's see if I can find that
article on
Gates. Yeah.
I thought it was down there.
I think you got another.
No, it's on page 1. Yep, I know that.
Here it is right here. Okay. Gates of Hell.
Yes.
Microsoft guru Bill Gates is busy rallying the troops to build around to bring about what he calls vaccine equity, which is his plan to vaccinate every single child in the world. Manipulating the heartstrings of his listening audience, Gates stated at a recent Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization conference that rich kids take it for granted that vaccines they receive, and that now is the time to provide the same vaccines for the world's poorest children.
It's now that we're going to start to give the last two vaccines that rich kids take for granted, the pneumococcal and rotavirus, over the next 5 years. Get them out to every child everywhere, said Gates. That means for the first time ever that we have equity in vaccine. Well, mm-hmm.
This is by National News again.
Okay. By structuring his statements this way, Gates first implies that vaccines are some type of precious commodity that rich kids take for granted and that they need to get it into the hands of poor kids to create healthcare equity. He then beckons the nations of the world to use taxpayer dollars to fund this massive multi-billion dollar dream to save the children by injecting them with various mixtures of toxic chemicals. We have heard it all before, especially from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has been pushing for the whole world to be vaccinated for many years now. It is clear that Gates and his supporters will stop at nothing until every nation in the world is funding his vaccine campaigns, despite the fact that many of the vaccines being pushed come with a whole slew of devastating side effects and do not necessarily provide any benefits. Why are we lining the pockets of Big Pharma like this? Asked Daniel Berman, a vaccine expert from Doctors Without Borders, concerning the several developed nations that have already pledged billions to Gates' agenda. That just screams conflict of interest and corporate welfare to us.
There you go, guys.
So much for Bill Gates. He may be...
It's eugenics, too.
Yeah, that's what he believes in.
It's eugenics.
Well, this is an interesting thing. Cold fusion, we've read that before. Cold fusion device produces far more energy than they use, quickly approaching commercial viability. That'll, you know, render nuclear power obsolete, hopefully.
Cold fusion is real, but mass American news sources are not covering it. Experiments are currently being duplicated across the world to add further verification to the body of scientific proof. It is now possible to create energy with commonplace resources at no cost to the environment. Power plants using cold fusion will be constructed before 2012. Natural News has been covering the development of cold fusion for quite some time, as controlled experiments in Russia, California, Italy, and Japan have consistently proven that cold fusion is real. And that's the future of maybe the future of power.
One of the successful experiments was conducted by Professor Emeritus of Osaka University, Japan, Yoshiaki Ariata. Dr. Ariata performed a demonstration of cold fusion at Osaka. A colleague of his wrote afterwards, Ariata's demonstration was successfully done. It demonstrated live data, looked just similar to the data they reported in the papers. This showed the method highly reproducible. In addition, Andrea Rossi's fusion energy catalyzer was tested in a number of different scenarios this year, resulting in a stronger belief that cold fusion may already be ready for public use by the end of 2011. On January 14th, Focati and Rossi held a press conference discussing the 10-kilowatt generator. Another experiment, which took place roughly a month after that, at the University of Bologna, reported the model generated 15 kilowatts for 18 hours. There are currently plans to hook up roughly 200 of these smaller units in order to construct...
We've got 2 seconds. Good night, everybody, and we're going to just continue this article before we lose our stream. Thanks.
Construct 2 1-megawatt producing power plants before the end of the year. If these plants perform up to their potential, then we can hope for the construction of an industrialist-sized power plant within another year or so. So that's good.
All right. It tells
you how it works in that article, but I don't think...
Did you want to finish it?
It's pretty long. If people are interested, they can go to Cold Fusion.
And go to naturalnews.com.
It's a very good site. Interesting, and you can find out how it works and everything.
Yeah, they're a very good site. So, okay.
But we want to thank you for being here with us, and we hope you tune in tomorrow night.
Yes.
And have a nice evening, folks. Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Tell your friends
and we thank our guests, George Dixon and Woody.
Yeah, thanks.
This is segment of In the Ring.
And thanks for joining us tonight. Good night.